The bills are set down for second reading. The briefing and the report on the Reserve Bank of New Zealand are set down for consideration. The House comes to oral questions. Question number one is in the name of Tumpty Coffey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Finance and asks, what reports has he seen on the New Zealand economy and our response to COVID-19?
Mr. Speaker, in its weekly commentary released yesterday, Kiwi Bank economists said that, quote, the worst case scenarios were now off the table as we had wound back social distancing measures much sooner than most economic forecasts and downside scenarios. Not everyone is quite as optimistic as that. The ASB economists noted the New Zealand economy was faring a little better than most expected. The ASB senior economist Jane Turner told the New Zealand Herald that New Zealand's hard and early approach meant a stronger economy over the second half of the year than ASB and other forecasters had initially expected. Mr. Speaker, our swift and decisive response to COVID-19 has put us in a good position compared to the rest of the world. However, the impact on New Zealand from COVID-19 economically will still be significant as the rest of the world struggles with lockdowns and low confidence.
What reports has he seen on the international context for the New Zealand economy?
Mr. Speaker, the BNZ economist yesterday described the global outlook as, quote, a gale force headwind. New Zealand is an outward-facing exporting nation, so we will always be affected by any global downturn. The BNZ said, given that exports account for almost a third of our GDP, the prevalence of COVID-19 across the globe will continue to be a limiting factor on our economic expansion. The government will continue to cushion the blow for our businesses and workers while we rebuild the economy.
What reports has he seen on unemployment as a result of COVID-19?
Mr. Speaker, many economists have revised down their predictions for unemployment on the back of economic activity being better than expected due to our move to level one. Westpac said on Friday it expects unemployment to peak at 8%, not 9.5% as originally predicted, and the OECD has also picked an unemployment peak of just under 8% in its new forecast this week. If we look across the Tasman in Australia, the Reserve Bank Governor there has revised his previous 10% unemployment forecast down to an 8% peak. So we are expected to track along the same lines as Australia when it comes to unemployment. Mr. Speaker, this government is keeping New Zealand moving through our investments in education and training, particularly in trades training and apprenticeships, but we must recognise there will be tough times ahead and the government will continue to support people through that.
Question number two, Todd Muller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Prime Minister. Is she confident her government has the systems in place and the competence required to increase the number of people in jobs and grow the economy through infrastructure investment?
Mr. Speaker, yes. As a government, we are focused on creating jobs and growing the economy through a number of avenues, not just infrastructure. We're making law changes to speed up planning processes, investing in apprenticeships, opening up international markets through trade, supporting the agricultural sector to create clean green food to sell to the rest of the world, and investing in research and development amongst many other initiatives, Mr. Speaker.
Supplementary. To the Prime Minister, why, almost 6 months since her finance minister announced a $12 billion New Zealand upgrade infrastructure program to, and I quote, increase the size of the economy, do recent answers to written questions show only $11 million has been spent on transport projects?
Mr. Speaker, I'm happy to give an update on the transport projects again that were only announced in, if my recollection is correct, in February. They include State Highway 58, where the NZTA is in negotiations with builders there on Stage 2. That's expected to be up and running in August. They're opening registrations of interest for the Tauranga Northern Link, Penn Link and the State Highway 1 Papakura to Drury South. They're working with two shortlisted parties on who will deliver the shared pathway across the Auckland Harbour Bridge, and geotechnical testing is already underway for Ōtaki to north of the Levin to assist with the design process. Mr. Speaker, if the member wants to ask about projects beyond transport, I'm happy also to give him an update on our investment in the regions, the clean powered public service and school infrastructure investment, which is all underway as well.
To the Prime Minister. How many of the 11 shovel-ready projects she announced yesterday will have spades in the ground by the election?
Mr. Speaker, I think the important point here is that we are reducing down the time.
Order. The Prime Minister's a very small distance away from me, and I can't hear her.
Mr Speaker, we've reduced down the potential delays in those projects, which sometimes could be delay completion by up to 1 to 2 years to something in the order of potentially 70 days. Mr Speaker, I would have thought that the member would support the fact that those 11 projects will be expedited. They do still need to go through a process, so whilst I won't give a start date, they will be considerably reduced than what they otherwise might be.
Is she confident that those projects you just mentioned will start faster than the Puhoi to Wellsford roading project, which took 7 years between announcement and work actually getting underway?
Mr Speaker, actually it wasn't just the Puhoi to Wellsford. Under the last government, the Auckland Wested Ring Route took 4 years from the time it was announced to the time it started. The Wellington Northern Corridor, a corridor again, 4 years from announcement to the start. Christchurch motorway projects, 7 years from the time they were announced to the time they started. Mr Speaker, I'm proud not only of the significant investment we have made, but also the fact that we are cracking on with infrastructure projects, not just roads, health and education, that will make a difference to New Zealanders' jobs and lives.
Supplementary.
So is the Prime Minister saying that despite being announced yesterday as shovel-ready, there will be no projects with spades in the ground come election?
No, Mr Speaker, I did not say that.
Order. Not sure which member it was, but just keep me out of it. The Honourable Todd Muller.
I repeat to the Prime Minister. How many of the 11 shovel-ready projects she announced yesterday will have spades in the ground by the election?
Oh, Mr Speaker, for some of those projects, for instance, those that are dealing with significant water shortages, it will enable earthworks to start in a matter of months if it passes through the process. Mr Speaker, again, I would point out to the member, this is on top of the New Zealand Upgrade Investment. It is on top of the most significant investment in infrastructure, $45 billion over a forecast period. This is on top of the $3 billion we've said we'll put in through the COVID Response and Recovery Fund. And it is on top of what the last government failed to do, which was invest in infrastructure.
To the Prime Minister.
The Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Prime Minister. Do any of these transport projects include the following three in an advertisement up north this week? Moving the Auckland port to Northport, a floating dock at Marsden Point, and moving the New Zealand Navy to Marsden Point, all claimed by Shane Retty in an advertisement this week in Northland.
Mr Speaker, obviously if the member wishes to float ideas amongst his team, he is welcome to do that.
To the Prime Minister. So when Phil Twyford announced, quote, Unitech deal marks major Kiwi build milestone, unquote, 813 days ago on the 25th of March 2018, should the public have expected the development to have started by now rather than being added to her reheated list of 11 shovel-ready projects yesterday?
Mr Speaker, the member well knows that any housing project would usually go through a significant RMA process. What the government has announced is a shortening of that considerably. And Mr Speaker, while we're on housing, happy of course to again announce in this opportunity that we are now up to 4,670 public housing places under this government, and that is under usual processes. Well over our expectation then of delivering 6,403 years, and again we've announced another 8,000 houses as part of our COVID recovery and response, which will generate up to 4,000 jobs.
Why should New Zealanders believe in her government's ability to deliver jobs and grow the economy through infrastructure, when despite promising to finish the Auckland Light Rail in 2021, the project has no plan, delivery partner, business case, costing, consents or route?
Mr Speaker, because under this government we got unemployment to the lowest in a decade. And Mr Speaker, because under this government we have started work on Penlink, State Highway 1, Papakura to Drury South, Northern Pathway, Tauranga Northern Link, and State Highway 58, because under this government we've started work on 200 full or partial school rebuilds. We have already initiated 1,283 approved projects under the New Zealand Upgrade Program for schools, which was only announced in February. Mr Speaker, they'll know that because we are already undertaking the projects we announced and getting things cracking to generate jobs for New Zealanders.
To the Prime Minister, if your government is competent to get people into jobs and grow the economy, why has it only built 395 of the 10,000 Kiwi-built homes it promised to deliver by 2021?
Speaker, I welcome the chance to point out that we have built more houses than any government, including that members, since the 1970s. 4,670 public housing places, another 8,000 funded by this government that will generate 4,000 jobs and homes for Kiwis. Mr Speaker, we inherited a housing crisis. We are getting on with fixing it.
For the Prime Minister.
The Honourable Dr. Winch. Megan Woods.
Is the Prime Minister aware that our 395 Kiwi-built houses built over this term, in addition to the 700-odd that are under construction, far outstrips what the previous government achieved in terms of 104 affordable houses over 9 years in government?
Mr Speaker, 100 roughly houses is exactly why we inherited a housing crisis. We have built more houses as a government than any government since the 1970s, and we stand proudly on that record.
To the Prime Minister, when she said 500...
Order, and order. No, it's no good looking behind. The member will stand, withdraw and apologise. Blatant and stupid.
Draw and apologise.
To the Prime Minister, when she said 559 days ago that the government's $100 million green investment fund would bring, quote, cash and know-how to the table to partner with business to develop a clean green future for everyone, would she have expected the fund to have made an investment by now?
Mr Speaker, stay tuned.
The Right Honourable Winston Peter.
Can I ask the Prime Minister, with respect to the four-lane highway from Warkworth all the way to Whangarei, did she inherit a situation where the National Party had already committed to doing that? Well, how would you know? How would you know?
Order, no? Order.
The least qualified...
Order! The member will resume his seat. Mr Brownlee, you know that there's only one person who makes that decision, and it's not you, and you certainly don't do it from there, and you certainly don't do it when the question's being asked. I'm going to ask Mr Peters to start his question again.
Could I ask the Prime Minister, with respect to the four-lane highway between Warkworth and Whangarei, did she and her government inherit a committed plan from the previous government to do that, or a plan that says that they're now committed to it, as it was in the advertisement this week from one Shane Retty?
Mr Speaker, for the most part on these projects, we inherited press releases.
To the Prime Minister, is it not a fact that when it comes to growing the economy, the hallmark of her government has been a complete failure to deliver, and her team simply doesn't have the acumen to plan, build and drive this country forward?
No. No.
Question number three, Jenny Anderson.
My question is to the Minister for the Environment. How does he propose that fast-track consenting will help the COVID-19 recovery?
Mr Speaker. Mr Speaker.
The Honourable David Parker.
Thank you, Mr Speaker.
I was just looking for the member. He's got more distant.
Oh, thank you. I still look the same. The government's number one economic priority as we recover from the COVID-19 global pandemic is to create and retain jobs for New Zealanders. Over 45,000 New Zealanders have lost their jobs as a consequence of the COVID crisis, and it is of critical importance that as many New Zealanders as possible can return to the workforce as quickly as possible. The government plans to introduce special legislation today to support New Zealand's recovery by fast-tracking resource consenting and designation so that job-rich projects can gain approval as soon as possible, faster than through the standard RMA process. This will bring forward the construction projects, often by months and sometimes by years. This bill helps New Zealand provide New Zealanders with jobs and incomes and supports the economy to recover from the effects of COVID-19.
How will the fast-track legislation work?
Mr. Speaker, there are essentially three parts to the fast-track process to speed up projects and bring forward jobs. Firstly, there are 11 named projects that are referred directly to an expert consenting panel by Parliament. The panel will set appropriate conditions for the projects before they can proceed. The second track applies to applications for other private or public projects. Applicants must provide information to the Minister for the Environment on how the project meets the criteria specified in the bill, in particular employment. Selected projects will then be referred by Order and Council to panels for consideration. The third aspect is the ability for the New Zealand Transport Authority and Kiwi Rail to undertake repair, maintenance and minor upgrade works on existing infrastructure and road and rail corridors as permitted activities subject to certain conditions.
How will the fast-track legislation ensure that environmental protections are maintained and Treaty of Waitangi commitments are honoured?
While extraordinary times such as this require extraordinary measures, environmental outcomes ought not to be sacrificed. While these projects are being advanced in time, environmental safeguards remain. Part 2 of the RMA, including the recognition of matters of national importance, will continue to apply. RMA treaty principles and treaty settlements will be upheld. Finally, the fast-track law is a short-term intervention that will repeal in 2 years. It's not part of the wider review of the RMA. That comprehensive review led by retired Court of Appeal Judge Tony Randerson QC is expected to report back soon, and I expect to release that in the next few weeks.
Question number 4, the Honourable Paul Goldsmith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Minister of Finance. What steps has he taken, if any, to ensure government spending has clear outcomes and delivers good results?
Mr. Speaker, as a government, we are constantly assessing the outcomes and results from our investments. This includes through regular monitoring of core investments by Cabinet committees and oversight from the Cabinet Priorities Committee. In terms of my own responsibilities, all budget proposals are assessed by the Treasury before being approved, and agency monitoring arrangements are regularly undertaken by the Treasury and assessed by the Auditor General. One example of this is the programme of baseline reviews, which has assessed agencies such as the Ministry of Social Development and Defence and is currently looking at Justice and MBIE. A further example is a specific team that is working on supporting the delivery of commitments made under the COVID Response and Recovery Fund in light of the large investments involved and the need for rapid implementation.
What follow-up actions has he taken to ensure the $12 billion spent on the wage subsidy went to those who genuinely needed it, since his ministerial colleague, Carmel Cipollone's office, said that they were not interested in the wage subsidy fraud figures?
Mr. Speaker, in respect of the second part of that question, that's not an accurate reflection of Minister Cipollone's view. What the government has done is put in place a team of 104 investigators who have currently looked at 6,749 audits. 491 of those have been referred to MSD for investigation, and thus far the amount paid back to the fund as a result of all of this and voluntary refunds amounts to $158.2 million, Mr. Speaker.
Has he heard of some businesses delaying invoices so that they met his wage subsidy extension threshold? And if so, what steps has he taken to ensure the integrity of that nearly $4 billion programme?
Mr. Speaker, the audit process that's underway for the first phase of the wage subsidy scheme will be continued in the extension phase. And, Mr. Speaker, the vast bulk of New Zealand businesses have done the right thing, made sure the wage subsidy has been passed on to their employees. Where that hasn't happened, we have said that we will follow it up and chase those people down.
What outcomes did the Education Minister tell them were expected by spending $87 million to send internet modems to high decile schools for kids who didn't need them to arrive after they've got back to school?
Oh, Mr Speaker, again, the member seems to think that the idea that we might actually facilitate all New Zealand children to keep learning through a global pandemic is somehow a bad thing. Clearly, the member doesn't seem to think it's important that our young people actually are able to learn. The program supported a large number of young New Zealanders to be able to continue their learning, and it's an important program. And the idea that we shouldn't try and somehow or other actually improve digital access for young people just surprises me the member would want to go there.
What does he say to the parents of my local school in Epsom who worry about how we're going to pay for all the government spending and debt his government's taking on, and then see 88 modems turn up after the lockdown when the school thought they might have needed two months ago?
Well, Mr Speaker, what I have been advised by the Minister of Education is that the Ministry of Education relied on advice that came from schools as to where there needed to be the delivery of technology, Mr Speaker. But the member does need to be a little careful about how he might explain to Mr Seymour's constituents in Epsom what's going on with spending when he and his party continue to say that they would spend and spend more. He could answer the same question himself.
Quality. How can New Zealanders have confidence that the $3.2 billion he's announced for rail since coming into office will yield better results than the $9 million spent on the Napier to Wairoa line, which has had a grand total of 6 trains in 6 months?
Oh, Mr Speaker, I think it's relatively rich to hear that side of the House talk about rail, Mr Speaker. What we inherited was a rail system with 50 and 60-year-old engines and wagons, tracks that couldn't be used all over New Zealand. And I'm extremely proud, on behalf of all three parties that make up this government, that we're actually investing in rail. And to quote the Deputy Prime Minister, it's back on track.
Question number 5, the Honourable Judith Collins.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. To the Minister for Economic Development, with your indulgence, Mr Speaker, congratulations to the Minister on his promotion. Does he stand by...
Order. Order.
I ask for indulgence.
I am very tempted to cancel the member's question. Think about the punishment as we go on.
To the Minister for Economic Development, does he stand by his 1 April statement, quote, "That's why we are now developing a pipeline of infrastructure projects from across the country that would be ready to begin as soon as we are able to move around freely and go back to work," end quote?
The Honourable Speaker, Phil Twyford.
Yes, and that's why the government has already announced some of this pipeline, including the Minister of Housing's public housing construction program, the additional $1 billion for rail announced in the budget by the Minister of State-owned Enterprises, schools up and down the country with school improvement projects underway. The Minister of Transport informs me that there are more than 40 state highway projects under construction across New Zealand right now. A number of ministers, including the Ministers of Transport, Health and Education, are continuing work on the projects that were announced in the NZ Upgrade Program. Overall, I'm advised that Budget 2020 forecasts around $14 billion in net capital expenditure in the year ended 30 June 2021.
How many, if any, of the 1,924 projects put forward by the Infrastructure Industry Reference Group are shovel-ready right now?
Oh, the member would have to ask the Minister of Finance that question, because he's leading the assessment and decision-making process around those projects.
Then how many new projects have begun now that we are back at work and able to, quote, move around freely, end quote?
Oh, as I said to the member earlier, there is a long list of projects in the government pipeline of infrastructure projects, including housing and roads and schools and health and rail, far too many to take up all the time of the House recounting.
Then will he table the list?
Well, I'd have to see how long it took to compile it, because the list is so long. It might not be a good use of the House's time.
Do any of the 1,924 projects put forward by the Infrastructure Industry Reference Group need the fast-tracking consent in order to proceed? And was he thinking of those when he put out his press release on the 1st of April?
No, I don't believe any of them need the RMA fast-tracking to proceed, but many of them will probably benefit from it.
Question number six, Mark Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Minister of Regional Economic Development, what recent milestones has the Provincial Growth Fund achieved?
The Honourable Shane Jones.
Mr. Speaker, sir, this answer might be a tad longer, given the extent of the popularity of the Growth Fund. The Nelson Food Factory opened its doors last week and announced it was in partly related to the $778,000 Provincial Growth Fund investment. It provides a collaborative and supportive environment, and it will house businesses of particular relevance to the sitting member, known such as the Mad Melon, processing and bottling watermelon juice, Little Busey's, fresh to you. Sir, to show that we are working on areas that are neglected, such as the Taipotini and other such far-flung areas, we are rolling out and creating jobs to the level of 30 local people on the Kawatiri Coastal Trail. And the final thing I'd say, sir, is at the end of 2020 April, $2.8 billion of the fund has been committed to specific sectors or projects. $1.4 billion has been contracted. $544 million has been paid to recipients. 557 projects have been contracted.
Before the supplementary is asked, I'm going to ask the member whether he reflected on the local member in that answer.
No, point of order.
No, it's a straight question. It's a yes or a no.
No, it's a point of. I'm taking a point of order.
Well, I'm. Well, actually, I was first, and therefore you will respond. The member will respond to my very simple question.
Sir, I agree with you. Point of order.
Right.
Point of order. I agree with you, sir, that I have to be judicious in my language, but that member is pretty rough and pretty wide and pretty bright and colourful with his language, and if he dishes it out, he has to be prepared to accept it.
Yes, and one does not reflect on members in the way that that member did then. It is totally inappropriate. He knows it's inappropriate. And as a result of that, we're going to move on to question seven.
The Honourable Michael Woodhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Health. Will he accept all the recommendations of the Health and Disability System Review? If not, which recommendations will he be rejecting?
The Honourable Dr. David Clark.
Speaker, the Health and Disability System Review is a thorough and thoughtful piece of work, and I want to take this opportunity to put on record my deep and sincere thanks to the panel and the Māori Expert Advisory Group for their mahi and insight. Cabinet has accepted the case for reform and the direction of travel outlined in the review, specifically changes that will reduce fragmentation, strengthen leadership and accountability, and improve equity and access and outcomes for all New Zealanders. That means we are committing to an ongoing program of reform to build a stronger health and disability system. As the member will understand, change of this scale will require legislation which will be subject to the usual processes. Decisions on individual recommendations will be taken to Cabinet over coming months and into the next term of Parliament.
To the Minister, does he believe the public has a right to know prior to September 19 which of the substantive recommendations the government would implement if it was in a position to do so after that date?
Mr. Speaker, the Cabinet has accepted the direction of travel in the report, and therefore the recommendations contained in the report will be worked on and worked up for legislation, but it will be the privilege of the next government to put into place the recommendations that it agrees with, and the member knows how that process works.
question
to the Minister. Would it have been in a position to do so, to put those recommendations to the public, had the Minister not refused to accept the report in March because his, quote, singular focus was on the health response to COVID-19, end quote?
Mr. Speaker, I think it was appropriate that the government was focused on COVID-19 during the period, and the results of that singular focus have meant that we have been very successful in our response to COVID to date. However, now that we are at alert level one, I have received the report and turned it round in a little over 3 weeks, which for a report of this size and substance is a very quick turnaround for Cabinet to agree to the direction of it. Now the public can access this report, read it for themselves, so can the political parties. And if the member wishes to have a briefing from the lead author, I can arrange that for him.
To the Minister, does that singular focus indicate that he is incapable of doing more than one thing at a time?
Mr. Speaker, I won't reflect on whether that is the case for the member himself. That leads to that question. Obviously, we have priorities, and as a government, we have prioritised responding to the COVID situation. The results there speak for themselves. Now that we're at alert level one, we have agreed that it's a good time to receive this substantial report, which indeed does indicate years of neglect have had a deleterious effect on our health system. 9 long years of neglect by that government. Now we have a report that maps out a way forward, and it's up to every party in this parliament to take a view on it. And if that member objects to some of the findings in here about greater accountability, better outcomes for New Zealanders, then he's free to say so.
To the Minister. Will he commit to no increase in health bureaucracy as a consequence of any changes?
Mr. Speaker, this report is focused on producing better outcomes for New Zealanders. As a government, we have grown the health sector. We have now 1,700 more nurses in the sector than when we took office, 900 more doctors in the sector. We have 600 more allied health workers. We want to make sure that it's a system that delivers for New Zealanders. We will have fewer DHBs. We will have fewer DHBs as a result of this report, which recommends that we move to that situation where we plan for our regions and then over time work out how we have fewer of those structures in place.
To the Minister, is his comment in the previous answer, quote, we will have fewer DHBs, end quote, an indication that the government has already committed to that recommendation in the Simpson report?
Mr. Speaker, the government has, as I've outlined previously, agreed to the direction in the report. If the minister wants, sorry, the former minister believes that we should have more DHBs, I believe he'd be on his own with that one.
The Right Honourable Winston Peter.
As a matter of precedent, Minister, how many DHBs were to be reduced under the previous policy that he inherited from his predecessor in his portfolio?
Well, Mr. Speaker, when I inherited the DHB sector from the former government, it was very much a status quo situation. There seemed to be no indication that they wanted to reform it. All they wanted to do was starve it of funding and reduce the services available to New Zealanders. We had an independent report done that showed that New Zealanders had higher barriers to care because of the underfunding of that previous government.
Question number 8, the Honourable Todd McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Minister of Tourism, what advice has he received, if any, on the number of jobs that will be saved by the Tourism Recovery Fund, and how many jobs have been saved so far?
The Honourable Kelvin Davis.
Mr. Speaker, over the last 2 weeks, we have announced $1.5 million of funding for Whale Watch Kaikoura, which helped save 40 jobs. We announced $4 million worth of funding for Discover Waitomo, which helped save another 40 jobs. Those businesses keep their communities alive. Protecting them means protecting the many jobs and businesses that rely on their survival. This funding is the start, and I look forward to making more announcements, helping more businesses, protecting more jobs and more communities in the weeks to come.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. That question asked what advice he had received and then how many had been saved. He answered the second part, not the first.
Well, the member can say something about whether he's received advice or not.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the advice I received is that the government's whole package has provided billions of dollars in support to not just tourism but to all businesses and have saved thousands and thousands of jobs.
Was any modelling done on the number of jobs to be saved by the Tourism Recovery Fund prior to its announcement? And if not, why not?
Mr Speaker, I'll repeat what I just said then, that the work that the government has done in its totality, as well as for the tourism industry, will save thousands of jobs.
Why hasn't he considered tourism-specific direct financial support for tourism businesses to save jobs, like National's Tourism Accelerator program that will help hundreds and hundreds of businesses who are struggling?
No order. I'm going to ask the member to repeat the question without the assertion.
Why hasn't he considered tourism-specific direct financial support for tourism businesses to save jobs, like National's Tourism Accelerator program that will help hundreds and hundreds of tourism businesses?
No, that's not a question. There's an assertion sitting in there which obviates the question. The member's had two goes. Jamie Strange.
What recent announcements has he made on the allocation of funding from the Tourism Recovery Package?
Mr. To do with this question?
It's just a point of order.
Well, okay, but unless it's raised immediately, I couldn't see anything wrong with that question, which was a bit of a difference from the two before it.
Well, I am referring to the two before. I've thought very carefully about the way you ruled there. And it would seem to me that if you're going to say that the assertion that was used in the question by the Honourable Todd McClay is out of order, then surely the answers, which are supposed to, according to standing orders, have a mirror effect from the Honourable Calvin Davis, would also have been out of order. He spoke about saving thousands of jobs without any reference to it at all.
I'm somewhat at a loss. The Honourable Calvin Davis didn't answer the questions because I didn't let him. So the member's totally irrelevant. We'll go back. Jamie Strain. Oh, Mr. Brownlee, the other member will resume a seat.
Yes.
The other point that I will make is to remind the member, and I accept that he said he was thinking slowly, that he has a requirement to take a point of order immediately, and he didn't. He... The Deputy Prime Minister will withdraw and apologise.
Do you want to apologise? Point of order.
A point of order.
Point of order, sir, is you're taking a point of order. You were taking a comment from Mr. Brownlee, and you put your finger on it. He just was too slow, so he should be ruled out.
Yes, and the member is going to withdraw and apologise again. I don't need that sort of support. That was the point that I was making, and he shouldn't support me in that way, either when I'm on my feet or when I'm sitting down.
I throw and apologise, Mr. Speaker.
Right. Jamie Strange.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Minister, what recent announcements has he made on the allocation of funding from the Tourism Recovery Package?
Mr. Speaker, over the past 2 weeks, we have announced $4 million to Discover Waitomo, $20.2 million for New Zealand's 31 regional tourism organisations, $1.5 million for Whale Watch Kaikoura. We've helped 557 businesses through the Tourism Transitions Program.
Excellent.
And announced that Mayor Steve Chadwick and Grant Webster will chair the Tourism Futures Task Force. And, Mr. Speaker, there will be much, much more to come.
Excellent. Supplementary.
Jamie Strange.
What reports has he seen that suggest alternate funding plans to support the recovery of the tourism sector?
Mr. Speaker, I've seen reports that suggest funding one-off projects over 4 years, but this does nothing for those looking to pivot their businesses to the domestic market. It won't protect our strategic assets, and it won't save jobs.
Order. I think I know where this is going, and it is out of order. And I'll just say to members that they should know that as well.
Mr. Speaker. To the Minister, what advice, if any, has he received on the number of tourism businesses that will benefit from the Strategic Assets Protection Program?
Mr. Speaker, we anticipate there will be about 60 businesses that would be considered strategic tourism assets that would need to receive some form of support.
Well, why is he happy to only support 60 businesses through that program and not the thousands of other tourism businesses who are struggling and not being supported?
Well, Mr. Speaker, that goes back to the broad support that the government has put in place since COVID-19 hit these shores. The Minister of Finance announced some $12 billion in support initially through the wage subsidy support, through various tax measures, through the small business cash flow scheme. Tourism businesses, along with many businesses across New Zealand, have received much support from this government throughout the COVID response.
That's right. Well, is he aware that his government's program is four times the cost of National Tourism Accelerator program to help 10 times as many tourism businesses? And shouldn't he be doing more to help these struggling tourism operators and their staff right now?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I've just outlined that we have helped many, many tourism operators. The difference between our two packages, and I'm very glad that he raised it, is the difference is that we're getting $400 million out the door within the next couple of weeks, whereas the opposition's proposal was for $100 million, so $25 million a year for 4 years, and nobody knows exactly what it's going to achieve, and no media have even picked it up. I don't even think anyone in the country is aware that an announcement was made.
I know it was an opposition question, but yes, and I think people should take care about asking questions for which this minister has no responsibility, or they're likely to get that back again.
Well, it's not clear what he has responsibility for. Mr. Speaker, why has he only...
Order.
Question number nine, Dr. Deborah Russell.
Tanakwe, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Minister of Revenue. What action has the government taken to help ease the impact of COVID-19 on taxpayers' end-of-year assessments?
The Honourable Stuart Nash.
Mr. Speaker, the government is taking decisive and considered action to support taxpayers through the COVID-19 pandemic. To ease financial stress for taxpayers, we are changing the rules around write-offs for tax debt. Inland Revenue's end-of-year automatic income tax calculation process for individuals is currently underway and expected to run until early July. It is the annual wash-up which results in people either having tax to pay or receiving a refund. For the 2019-20 income tax year, this government made a decision that tax payable up to $200 will be written off. The usual threshold for writing off tax is $50.
How many taxpayers will be affected by the increase in the write-off threshold?
Mr. Speaker, increasing the write-off threshold from $50 to $200 will reduce tax bills for approximately 149,000 taxpayers. Writing off those amounts of tax may not seem huge to everyone, but it can be significant for someone experiencing financial stress. In the 2018-19 year, for example, around half of those who had a tax bill up to $200 were earning less than $60,000 a year. We're doing everything we can to help households as we move into the economic recovery phase post-COVID-19.
What other relief will be of assistance to taxpayers for the end-of-year tax process?
Mr. Speaker, the changes to the IR systems under business transformation process in 2019 allowed for most individual taxpayers to have their end-of-year tax assessment calculated automatically. The autocalc process has meant that people have already started receiving their tax refunds. As at 10th of June, there have been 2.3 million assessments carried out. That's 1.3 million more customers than at the same time last year. To date, IR has paid out over $610 million in tax refunds and over $30 million has been written off. Once the process is complete, Inland Revenue expects to issue refunds in excess of $650 million as part of individual income tax assessment process.
Question number 10, Chris Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Minister of Transport, has he read the text of the 29 February 2020 email from the Office of Right Honourable Winston Peters to him on Auckland Light Rail? If not, why not?
The Honourable Phil Twyford.
Yes.
Why did he not read it to prepare for question time on 11th of June 2020 when I asked him about the email?
That's not the question that the member asked me in the last question time exchange.
Why did I not? Why did he not?
Order, order. I think that's even.
Why did he not read the email before question time on the 11th of June 2020 when I asked him to read out the text of the email?
Because it's not in the public interest to release the content of communications that are necessary to maintain the effective conduct of public affairs through the free and frank exchange of opinions during the cross-party consultation process.
How did he know it wasn't in the public interest to disclose the contents of the email on the 11th of June when he hadn't read the email before the 11th of June?
Well, I had read the attachment to the email, but not the email.
Question number 11.
Mr. Speaker, I was reclining in my chair. Does the attachment to the email contain a statement of position from the New Zealand First Party on the Auckland Light Rail project?
Yes.
Does the attachment to the email that contains a statement of position from New Zealand First indicate that the New Zealand First Party does not support the project being considered by Cabinet?
Well, as I've said to the member about five times now, it's not in the public interest to reveal the content of that message.
Question number 11, Dr. Shane Ritty. A point of order, the Honourable Gerry Browning.
Mr. Speaker, I wonder if the Minister would be kind enough to explain to the House how you can not open an email but still read its attachment.
I'm sure what we can do is arrange for the member to be briefed on that. I know every now and again both of us have issues with our computers, but I'm sure we can get an explanation for him as to how sometimes other people print things off and give them to people or things like that. Question number 11, Dr. Shane Ritty.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Minister of Employment, what groups do his employment programs target, and against what outcomes will he measure their performance?
The Honourable Willie Jackson.
Mr. Speaker, the employment programs that I'm responsible for primarily focus on young people who are not engaged in education, employment or training, alongside members of our communities who have had historically poor employment outcomes. To answer the second part of the question, last year I launched the government's employment strategy, where we measure the outcomes of our programs through the objectives of this strategy, which include building a skilled workforce, supporting thriving industries and sustainable provinces, supporting an inclusive labour market, preparing for a changing nature of work, and building modern workplaces for a modern workforce. For example, through the lens of an inclusive labour market, I'm looking to see if there are improvements for those who have had historically poor outcomes. Over the past 2.5 years, we've seen the lowest unemployment rates for Māori in over a decade, a clear indication we're measuring outcomes against the strategy that our programs are making a difference.
Supplementary. Which of his six employment programs target non-Māori over the age of 24 who live in the regions?
Mr. Speaker, our programs cover all people, Māori, Pākehā, Pacifica. All the programs targeted towards special groups, but they're open to everyone, apart from obviously our new Māori trade training that is coming.
Supplementary. What is his best estimate of the number of people who are ineligible for his employment programs?
Mr. Speaker, I can't give you that estimate at this time, but if you want to put the question in writing, we'll come back to you from my office.
Supplementary.
The Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Could I ask the Minister as to his employment programs targeting various areas? Do any of them, for example, targeting moving the Navy from Auckland up to Marsden Point? B, the floating dock to Whangarei or Marsden Point? Or, for that matter, moving the port of Auckland to Marsden Point, as Mr. Ritty claims in an advertisement in a newspaper in Whangarei, this week, that he is engaged in.
Mr. Speaker, yes, I think some of our programs cover that area.
Supplementary. How many years will it take for Mana and Mahi to place the 35,000 people the Prime Minister said had applied for the unemployment benefit, given the current placement rate of 350 per year?
Mr. Speaker, we don't have that number at this stage. But what we do have is we have a very successful Mana and Mahi program, as that member knows, with an 80% success rate. And this is a program that everyone should be proud of, particularly that member across the House.
Supplementary.
No,
thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mayor Lubick.
How are his employment programs contributing to positive outcomes for New Zealanders?
Oh, Mr. Speaker, in August of last year, I launched the government's employment strategy, which is to deliver a productive, sustainable and inclusive New Zealand. So for in my time as an employment minister, we have had the lowest unemployment rate, sir, in over a decade, the lowest Māori unemployment rate in over a decade, the highest employment rate for Māori since records began, and the lowest underutilisation rate, sir, in over a decade. And through those employment programs, I have oversight of over 4,000 New Zealanders who've been engaged and connected to qualifications and employment. Yes, Potama Rangatahi, that Minister Jones supports. But, Mr. Speaker, it's not just about these individuals. It's about the positive impact on families and communities that member should be proud of, but sadly doesn't seem to be, because he comes up with these ridiculous questions every week.
Mayor Lubick.
What do the outcomes from Hei Potama Rangatahi mean for regional communities?
Oh, Mr. Speaker, they mean a huge amount to communities, regional communities, and we must continue to focus our attention on improving outcomes for our rangatahi, particularly in our provincial and rural communities. For example, sir, I'd like to share with the House the difference that the Mangatō Station and Forestry Restoration Project has made for the community in Kaikohe. We have 27 rangatahi who are not engaged in education, employment or training, who began their program, and upon completion, all 27, sir, are in continuous employment. When you consider that more than a third of people who participate in it have been expelled from school, 10% have criminal convictions, these programs are clearly making a positive difference for not only our young people, but for the whānau and the community that Mr. Reti represents.
Just before we go on, I did indicate to the National Party that they had none left. That was my count, and it was supported on my right. But if people do think that I am wrong, I'm happy to have another one, and it'll come off tomorrow if I'm incorrect.
If I'm correct.
Thank you. Supplementary. When you stated in this House that 81% of people in Mana and Mahi do not return to a benefit, over what time frame is that?
Mr. Speaker, in terms of that time frame, we find that over the months, over the next 6 months, we're finding that they're not going back, and we're monitoring them very closely. It's been incredibly successful, this Mana and Mahi, but we monitor these people all the time, and at the moment, in terms of Mana and Mahi, 6 months, over the following 6 months, there's been no return to benefits.
Question number 12, Dr. Liz Craig.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question's to the Minister of Health and asks, how is the government responding to the Health and Disability System Review?
Well, Mr. Speaker, today I released the Health and Disability System Review, which is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to tackle the long-term challenges our health and disability system is facing. The review confirms what I think the COVID-19 global pandemic has shown us all. We have a very good health and disability system. But it also found that our health and disability workforces are under considerable stress and that our system is complex and fragmented. This review sets out a path towards a better, more sustainable health system with clear lines of accountability, one that is more responsive to the needs of local communities. Cabinet has accepted the case for reform and the direction of travel outlined in the review, specifically changes that will reduce fragmentation, strengthen leadership and accountability, and improve equity of access and outcomes for all New Zealanders.
So what are the key findings and recommendations of the review?
Mr. Speaker, the review has made a series of far-reaching recommendations. They include shifting to a greater focus on population health, creating a new Crown entity provisionally called Health New Zealand, focused on operational delivery of health and disability services and financial performance, reducing the number of DHBs from the current 20 down to 8 to 12 within 5 years, creating a Māori Health Authority to advise on all aspects of Māori health policy and to monitor and report on the performance of the system, greater integration between primary and community care and hospital specialist services. Local planning must drive decisions. Our health and disability system needs to better understand the real needs of the community and when and where services should be available.
So what are the next steps for implementing the recommendations of the review?
Mr. Speaker, reforming our health and disability system is a massive undertaking, and it will not happen overnight. Meaningful change and improvement will take concerted effort over many years. Decisions on individual recommendations will be taken to Cabinet over coming months and into the term of the next Parliament. Cabinet has agreed that a small group of ministers should drive these reforms. That will be led by the Prime Minister and will include the Finance Minister, myself as Health Minister, and Associate Health Minister Pini Henare. I will also be appointing a ministerial committee to provide ongoing expert advice on implementation and improving system performance and equity of outcomes. And an implementation team will also be set up to lead the detailed policy and design work. It will be administered by the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet.
That concludes oral questions.